Blog Talk Radio.
When I sailed on a lonely deep, in the midnight watch I keep, I stand amazed when the stars on the billows gleam. And though I know a storm is rising above a dark horizon, I know, my Lord, I know you're here with me. So let there be light, Lord, let it shine out of your heart, here and in mine. When it rains from heaven above, let it rain, sweet heavenly love. Let there be light, let there be light. There's a call on the restless tide, like a long and endless night, and it breaks about like a raging symphony. And though I may be far from shore, I am anchored at heaven's door, 'cause I know, Lord, you're here with me. So let there be light, oh Lord, let it shine out of your heart, here in mine. Lead me out of the eye of the storm and of the promise of the crimson dawn. Let there be light, sweet Jesus, let there be light. Your grace is enough, your grace is enough. Find me and surround me in an ocean of love. Your grace is enough, grace is enough. Find me and surround me in an ocean of love. Your grace is enough, your grace is enough. Of your love, let there be light, and Lord, let it shine out of your heart. Oh, Jesus, here in mine, lay me out of the eye of the storm, in of the promise of the crimson dawn. Let there be light, oh Lord, let there be light. There is power, power, wonder-working power in the blood of the Lamb. There is power, power, there is wonder-working power in the precious blood of the Lamb, Jesus Christ. Precious blood of the Lamb.
That, my dear brothers and sisters, is none other than Steph McLeod, and what a song, Let There Be Light. Well, welcome, welcome, welcome to all of the precious saints of God to this weekly edition of the End Time News Report with our one and only sister, Marie. We are in studio today to continue a series that will truly bless your soul. It's a series, and it's a part of a very important subject that we have to make sure flies under the radar, because teachings like this and broadcasts like this and conversations like this, the emissaries of the Antichrist hates. And so when I tell you that this is an awesome series, it's really to draw your attention to this broadcast week after week after week, because I believe, my brothers and sisters, listen to me, I'm not bragging. I'm not trying to toot our own horn. I'm not trying to say that we're the only, you know, we're the only store on the block. I get it. There's a lot of apologetic ministries. I get it. But Sister Marie talks about things that most apologetic ministries ignore. I don't know why they ignore it, because the information is just so vital. And so you're in for a treat today. This is a continuation of six other broadcasts, and so I'm going to bring her on shortly. But as our dear brother McLeod was singing, Let There Be Light, we know that Christ is the light. The Bible sheds light. Revelation sheds light. When you tune into this broadcast, you're looking to put a spotlight on things that the enemy is doing undercover, that the enemy is doing in the cover of night, that the enemy is doing behind the scenes. We're putting a spotlight on it, a spotlight, so that you may have some clarity as to what's going on in the world, that you could put the pieces of the puzzle together and say, wait a minute, all of this critical race theory, all of this great reset, all of this stuff that Sister Marie's been talking about is vital for today. Vital for who? Vital for the saints. Vital for us, the people of God. And so that's why we do these shows. Well, before I bring her on, let me remind everyone that Sister AJ is going to be in studio tomorrow to continue her wonderful series. And what a 1-2 combination Sister Marie and Sister AJ on. I tell you, I can brag. I can really, really brag. You know, these two sisters are just dynamite. And so Sister AJ is going to be in studio tomorrow to do her series on Jesus in Hollywood. And also let me remind you that this button pusher here, this guy who sits in front of the computer and presses the buttons and plays the audio, I make my little contributions also. I get to teach a class once a week at the International Institute of Biblical and Ministerial Studies, in which we are endeavoring to raise up for Jesus a new generation of apologists, teachers, pastors, evangelists, you name it. We're trying to raise up unto the Lord an army of ministers who will roll up their sleeves and be ready to get to work. If you want to be part of this school, which, by the way, is registration free, tuition free, it's textbook free. In other words, we don't sell you textbooks. We don't buy textbooks from a publishing house and put a markup price on them and then have you pay for the markup price and the shipping and handling. No. If we recommend a book, I tell you, go buy it used. No one's trying to make money here. If I recommend a book, it's so that you can grow in knowledge, in understanding. So the school is called the International Institute of Biblical and Ministerial Studies. All you have to do to join our school is email us at iibms2020. When you send us the email with your intentions of joining, you automatically become registered. And then there's a nice young man by the name of Miguel Rivera. And he will email you and let you know what's going on and how you can start taking your classes. And coming this week, we're starting a new series on shepherding. This will be a nice time for some of you that were on the sidelines. You know, you were saying, well, I'll probably join in January when they start all over again. No. Start now. We have a series of classes coming on what does it mean to be a shepherd? Who's the greatest shepherd in the Bible? And how we're to take our cue from that shepherd in performing our duties as under-shepherds. So email us at iibms2020@gmail.com. And we promise to take care of you, to educate you, and do what is necessary to get you ready to serve Christ and his church. Finally, if you're in need of prayer, send us your prayer request at powerofprayer2020@gmail.com, powerofprayer2020@gmail.com. We promise to keep all prayer requests confidential. We promise, my brothers and sisters, to pray for you each and every day. And we promise to intercede on your behalf and to believe God for the impossible for you. Well, without any further ado, let me bring my dear sister on. Sister Marie, how you doing today?
I'm doing fine. And you, Brawl?
I'm doing well. And how's the family? The family's good. Everybody's good?
Everybody's fine. Just
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. How's Chico doing? Chico the dog. How's Chico?
Well, I don't want to say his name right now because if I he opened his
eyes.
He'll be ramming around the house. So
that's
he's doing fantastic.
Yeah.
He's a cuddle bug. He's funny, you know. He's one of those funny dogs. He has you laughing all the time. So
Absolutely. Chico went on a world vacation there. When you and your husband went on vacation, Chico went along. And I can tell you by the pictures that Chico was just living it up. He was just living it up. And
he certainly was.
Right. So, yeah, you know, dogs, it's amazing how dogs have their own personality. How dogs almost become like your children, you know, they make you laugh. The family dynamic, how that dog works with another dog and how they interact.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. It's just amazing. So, yeah.
Well, you know, there's a difference too, because I have a female who's older. She's old, getting old. And then we have the male who's young. Now, even in dogs, we know the difference. The personalities are totally different. She's real dainty acting, and he's rough. He's just rough. He's teasing her all the time. He's, you know, running around. He's hyper. He's like, you know.
Full of energy.
Typical.
Yeah.
Full of energy, just causing, you know,
a nuisance.
Cause
he's
havoc
a nuisance.
Or,
he just annoys her. He just annoys her.
He's
that's
like,
it.
He's a pet. So it's just like in the animal world, you can see the difference between the male and female.
Correct.
I was thinking their personalities are totally different. So, you know, even in this world, the animal kingdom, you can tell the difference between the male and the female just by behavior, how they act.
Sure.
You know. I was thinking that the other day. Thought he's a class clown, that one.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you, since you're good at analyzing animals and things like that, where would you put my former governor, Cuomo, Andrew Cuomo? What would you classify him as?
Oh, jeez. A hyena?
what a piece of work that guy is, isn't he? What a piece of work.
Oh, hey, did you get that thing I sent you from Australia? Yeah, it's Australia, the news. They're even talking about him. I sent you a clip.
Listen.
From
the guy, I mean, I'm an hour and a half away from where the guy has his Albany mansion, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he has a beautiful dog, a beautiful Alaskan Malamute. It's a beautiful dog. And and the bum, because he's a bum. You have to be a bum. He's asking people from his staff, who wants to keep the dog? Who wants
the dog?
The dog
ghost.
Right.
Pretty low.
So, yeah. Now, it's a gorgeous dog. It's a beautiful dog. If I was there, I'd say, listen, you bum, I'll take the dog. I'll teach him what a real man is like. Not, you know. And he abandoned the dog. He doesn't want the dog. I mean.
Well, there's a pattern of him abandoning things, isn't there?
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and he's a narcissist, and everyone's to blame except him. And he's got perfect memory, and the girls he fondled, they're confused, and you know he doesn't remember what they remember, and you got to remember he's Italian, and Italians kiss everybody, so that's wow, I couldn't use that excuse at home. I can't tell my wife because of my cultural background, I just go around kissing different women. That's not going to go well in my house.
No way.
No,
I don't think so. Nope.
So, what a creepy guy. I mean, he's a creep.
Yeah.
And then he just applied for retirement benefits, and the bum is going to get $50,000 a year. Think
what?
About for sitting at home, I think he's a four-term governor. Four terms.
Oh,
we had him. We had him 16 years.
Wow.
But we've had a string of governors that have resigned.
Right.
And they're all Democrats. They're all Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Elliot Spitzer is another one who resigned under a cloud, and he was Jewish, and he was visiting call girls, and one of his call girls ratted him out. And then when Spitzer resigned, then we had the African American fellow who's blind. Nice guy. He's a nice guy, but he was blind.
Right.
So he doesn't see what his aides are doing, and poor guy.
Wow.
So we went from and then after that we got Cuomo, and we had 16 years of creepy Cuomo, and. He went and named the Tappan Zee Bridge. We have a historic bridge in New York City that connects upstate New York to New York called the Tappan Zee Bridge. And in the middle of the night during the weekend, he signed a bill where the historic Tappan Zee Bridge now is named after his father, Mario M. Cuomo. And we the citizens of New York State have been fighting them to overturn it and put it back to Tappan Zee, because Tappan Zee has to do with the American Indians. See, that whole area has to do with the American Indian. We want our history preserved.
Correct.
And so but we got a beaut now. Her name is Hochul. Oh, is she a beaut?
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying, what's worse? What's worse, Cuomo or Hochul?
I know.
What's worse?
I know. It's terrible. I mean, there was something about, I saw that clip, and it was talking about, because he left, resigned, if he didn't resign, he would have been impeached. And if he was impeached, he would never be able to run for office again. So he resigned so he could run for office again. That's what
Correct.
I heard.
Correct. But listen, Cuomo's done. Listen, with the leaving of the dog, That was another strike.
That's
against
the last
them. Yeah, because you see the people see it as, see, all politicians, when they move into the White, notice every president has a dog, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the presidential dog. So Captain, which is Cuomo's the name of his dog, Captain was going to be the next presidential dog, he thought, you know. And
mm-hmm.
and so now that he doesn't, now that he can't be president, he said, bye, Captain, see you later. And and Captain must be looking at him and saying, you creep, you know.
Really?
You bum. You know,
yeah.
If I could only talk, I would tell him all the nasty things you did in this mansion.
Yeah, if he could speak. If he could speak.
Right, right. Absolutely.
Oh, boy. Terrible.
So, but now we got Hochul, and she looks as confused as a foreigner here in New York for the first time. You know, when somebody comes from overseas and you just put them in Albany,
right.
And they've never been out of their country. That's Hochul. She looks confused. The first thing she's going to sign into. Into law now.
What?
The mask.
What?
That's the first thing. You're putting on the mask again. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're trying that everywhere again.
Yeah, yeah.
You
that's
know,
the first
so,
thing she wants to do. Enforce the mask.
Well, that's
now, how about,
where she's coming from.
Yeah. How about Biden? How about that guy? And again, this is not about Democrat or Republicans. It's about results. You see, for me, it's about results.
Yeah.
And Biden is a beaut, let me tell you. He is a beaut. His Secret Service, you know, his Secret Service car, it's a little yellow
yeah.
school bus. That's his Secret Service car, little yellow. That tells you everything.
I knew you. Somehow I knew you were going to say I was watching a clip today of him, the Secret Service were showing him, walking him down the sidewalk, and they pointed
right.
to the White House to go in the door, and he just
right.
kept on walking,
yeah.
fast, on
sure.
the grass,
yeah. sure.
just kept going,
sure.
and they're all looking at each other.
Right.
Wander off, Joe.
See, Joe thinks now that he's the presidential dog and that he's being taken out for a walk. That's why, you know,
yes.
you know, I've taken out my when I had dogs, I would take them out for a walk,
yes.
right? And they're
right.
running all through the woods. They're excited because, you know, they're running.
Mm-hmm.
They're, you know, they're just happy to be out. Try getting the dog back into the house. They don't want to go into the house. They just want to stay outside. So that's
yes.
Joe. Joe was taken for a walk, and then, they're telling him back in the house. He doesn't want to go back in. He thinks he's the presidential dog instead of the president.
I know. He just keeps walking through the grass.
It's amazing.
Kind
of
oh,
it's amazing.
Geez.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, Now,
yeah,
more
we're
serious,
a major embarrassment.
Oh, my goodness. My goodness. Listen. On the Prime Minister of England, Boris Johnson, when that guy gets
mm-hmm.
mad, when that guy starts yelling at you, you know you're in trouble. Right? When Boris Yeltsin
yeah.
Gets up in the morning and he starts yelling at you and telling
mm-hmm.
you to get your act together, you know you're in trouble.
Yep.
But
terrible.
Yeah, what I like about Boris Yeltsin is
Johnson.
Boris Johnson, excuse me.
Yeltsin.
Boris Johnson. What I love about him
Yeltsin.
Is his hair. Is his hairdo.
I know. Isn't that wild? I mean,
yeah,
he's caught
you know,
in a whirlwind every day.
Listen. He can get up in the morning because I could tell you, look, all guys get up in the morning and their hair looks like that. Every guy gets up, right? And,
yeah.
and so your hair looks like that. When I was a kid, and again, I'm going back to the early 1960s, when I was a kid and I would get up in the morning and my hair was like that, my mother would go take me over to the stove before she put me on the school bus. She would take some lard take some lard, put it on my head, and give me the cowlick, right? That's how it was kept down. It was matted down with lard. I'm in the schoolyard running around at noontime, and my head's on fire because she put lard, right? So I'm saying, Mama, what did you do? You know, and then she said, well, why you pick a fight? Well, I'm a hothead. Why you a hothead? Well, you put lard on my head. So, no, but,
oh,
but what I love about him is that's his hairdo. So he can sleep any way he wants to, get up in the morning. Of course, he brushes his teeth and he shaves and all that. But he doesn't touch his hair. His hair is a hornet's nest.
I don't get it. I don't get it. They thought he was conservative, and they brought him in, and, oh, you know, what a nightmare for England.
Yeah.
It's been a nightmare.
Yeah.
He's nothing like that. I mean, all these crazy things, he's on board with all this craziness. And, you know, it's been
a
ride
for
them, too, with him.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If that guy is mad, if that guy who's a mess is mad at Biden and is telling Biden to get his act together, can you imagine how messed up Biden is?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know what to say about these people, I'm telling you. I mean, what can we do?
Yeah.
Sit back and laugh? I mean, about it.
I was watching the news earlier today with all of these people telling him to help out the Americans who are trapped in Afghanistan. 15,000 Americans
terrible.
Who can't make it to the airport, who the Taliban is looking for to cut off their heads. And this guy is saying everything. He says, whoever wants to get out, just contact. Whoever wants to get they all want to get out. What do you mean whoever wants to get out? Everybody wants to get out.
Yes.
I mean,
absolutely.
Listen, people want to get out of Mexico and come here. People want to get out of Guatemala and come here. Can you imagine? Listen, Guatemala, Mexico, Peru, Ecuador, they're not as bad as Afghanistan. So if people are trying to get out of those countries to come here, what do you mean if they want to get out? Do you think they want to stay there? What's in Afghanistan? What's there? Nothing.
Nothing.
Please.
Nothing at all.
Whoever wants to get out, contact us. Are you kidding me?
I don't know.
Please.
You know, these people have lost their minds.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah, it's just sad. I lose sleep at night thinking about the poor souls, American people over there in Afghanistan. I heard a recording of a woman crying saying, I want to go to the airport, but I'm here under my bed because they're running a search in the neighborhood for Americans.
Oh.
Right? And she's crying, saying, I want to see my children again. I don't know if I've ever seen my children again.
Oh, my goodness.
Breaks
your heart.
It breaks your heart, you know? And whoever wants to get out, contact us. Really, when the Taliban is shutting down the internet, how are we going to reach you if the Taliban is shutting down the internet? You tell me. How do we get in touch with you? It's a debacle. And then over here on this side of the country, on stateside, it's a debacle with groups, so-called groups like Black Lives Matter, which is what you've been talking about. So tell us about today's show, and let's deal with this mess here today.
Yeah, well, today we're going to continue our audio by Daryl Harrison and Virgil Walker of Just Thinking Ministries, titled Black Lives Matter with a question mark. So I'll read the audio description. In this episode of the Just Thinking podcast, Daryl Harrison and Virgil Walker take an in-depth look at the organization known as Black Lives Matter and the Marxist worldview that fuels it. And, of course, this is all against the truth of the Word of God. So they recommend that you grab a notepad, pack a lunch, because this episode is 2.5 hours of unfiltered truth about the ungodly and violent entity known as BLM. Now, last week, Daryl and Virgil started the show by reading from BLM's own website, and that gave us some information on why the organization was created and what they hope to accomplish. It started out that we've learned the organization was started in 2013 after the acquittal of Officer Zimmerman in the Trayvon Martin murder. And I'm saying murder because that's what I feel it is. You and I both agree that officer should have been convicted, okay?
Right.
But BLM, they want to eradicate white supremacy and violence, but the statement they made, or their statement, is by the state and vigilantes, by counteract of violence. So their driving force is dissatisfaction with outcomes. So before I continue on this, your thought?
Well, when they
is that correct, or did I miss?
No, you were right on the money. My observation would be, one, that the two brothers that we've been listening to are experts in what they talk about. So anytime you listen to these two brothers, you're just listening to the creme of the creme on this subject, right? They're the best.
Mm-hmm.
And also what adds validity to their words is that their skin color, right? They're telling you this group claims to represent black people, but they're not for black people because they're Marxist. They have an ideology. They have a Marxist ideology. So don't be hoodwinked by the name, because it's not about black lives. Also, what I would say is that whenever you want to eradicate white supremacy, as Black Lives Matter claims to want to do, they want to supplant it, they want to remove it, but then they want to add black supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
So right?
That's
because
a good point.
Right? Yeah. I mean, so when you remove, when Trump was voted out, someone came and took his place, which was Biden. So when you remove one power, like in the book of Daniel, right? The first beast he saw represented the Babylonian nation, right? The Babylonians.
Yes.
Then when the Babylonians were taken out, came the Medo-Persians. When the Medo-Persians were taken, the Greeks came. When the Greeks were taken out, the Romans came. When you remove one supposed power, you're putting, you are attacking them so that you can put yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Remember Castro?
Yes.
Castro was, the president, I can't remember his name, back in 1958. He's a scoundrel. He's keeping the people down. He's a bum. Let's get him out of office. Well, when Castro took him down, Batista, then what happened? They got 40 years of Castro, 50 years of Castro.
Yes.
50 years of nightmare.
Yep.
And
that's
what was he promising them? A better Cuba.
Yeah.
And what was
and
he promising
a,
them? Marxism. Well, he told them this is Marxism.
Yep.
Right? So that's what Black Matters are. So, and like you said in the past, wherever Marxism has been, it has been a disaster. Who wants that? Right? I mean, look.
Really?
COVID was in Africa, and in Africa, COVID was a disaster. COVID was in Spain. In Spain, COVID was a disaster. COVID was in Russia. In Russia, so do you think the Americans are welcoming COVID? If it was a disaster in all those places, who wants it here? Nobody. It's the same thing with Marxism.
Correct.
Who wants Marxism?
Yes.
Nobody.
People that don't understand it are accepting it. That's the thing. They don't understand what's behind it, you know. And a lot of people think that it's about taking care of them, and it's not.
No,
you
it's
know.
Not. It's not.
It's not about that, you know. And I had a few questions afterwards, and I think we all would agree about eradicating white supremacy. That would be a good thing. But
right.
I would ask these questions. In their view, who is the white supremacist? Is it the person? Are they labeled that because they're just white? You know, that's what we're seeing with this group. They, you know, are they
right.
defining just the white people? Yes. And listen, God has already defined who we are. But these people want to define. They're the people who define who the white supremacist is and who the vigilantes are. They want to define
Correct.
That.
And
Correct. What is their definition of eradicate? I mean, can they tell me what that means? Does that mean killing, harming, destroying? I know it's stealing is involved in it. Well, that should
right.
tell you right away who's behind it.
Right.
If they
right.
want to kill, steal, and destroy. But, you know,
right.
who's behind this? And, you know, and how would counteracts, another question I would have, counteracts of violence unify people? That's called war.
Right.
When you act out, that's just, you know, you're making war in the name of unity. That it doesn't work like that, you know?
Sure.
I mean, so I don't get it. And those changing outcomes involve dismantling our legal system as it currently exists. And if they do, what are they going to replace it with? You know,
whoa.
These are all questions that I sat down afterwards and I thought, okay, if I were to ask them one-on-one, this would be the questions that I would have, you
right.
know, but go ahead.
Look, you did a series, must have been a year ago, on what's going on in Jerusalem and Israel and the Noahide laws
mm-hmm.
and how these rabbis
yes.
are trying to
yep.
place on us the Noahide laws.
Mm-hmm.
This is a common thing among people who think that they're better than anybody else. And this
mm-hmm.
is the common characteristics. We're going to force you to do what we think is right. You
mm-hmm.
have these Jewish rabbis who want to enforce
right.
on us some law, right? They got, they I mean, you, and this is for everybody. Everybody's going to submit to this. Really?
Mm-hmm.
Really? And then you got Black Lives Matter, and they want to set a new set of laws. You got the Taliban
mm-hmm.
over there waiting for America to pull out on August 31st because then they want to establish their law. This is something
Correct.
That happens all around the world. And it's called oppression. You're being
mm-hmm.
forced. You're being forced to
yes.
what? Right? So it's just wickedness. The mask. I got a new governor. Today's her first day on the job. What does she say? You're putting on the mask. What?
Mm. Yeah.
You mean to tell me you're not going to deal with higher taxes first? You're not going to give homeowners a tax relief? The first thing out of your mouth is you're putting on the mask again? Are you nuts, lady? Are you nuts? But you see, it's like you're a princess of a governor, Gretchen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Boy,
yeah,
if she had her way, what would you people be doing over there in Michigan?
What would be
happening over there?
We would be in chains
Forget
in our
it.
Home.
And
yes.
this is what we see. This is what we see everywhere now, where everybody,
yep.
the gays, what are the gays trying to do? Okay, we want you to accept all of these alphabet people. You have to
mm-hmm.
accept all these you have to accept all these different sexes. You also did a show which blew my mind because it was a clip from a lady in England where there was like 140 six or seven different sexual preferences, and I'm saying, boy,
mm-hmm.
I would like to hear her explain all of those 140, because I thought there was only two.
Yes. Exactly.
And I said, I can't.
Exactly.
Where does she get these clips? Because, I mean, these people, look, they're crazy people.
Yeah.
And now that woman in England.
See? Yeah.
Right. That woman in England wants us to accept by law that there are all of these preferences when there are not.
That's right.
They're not. And so this is what I find around the world. Different people on an agenda forcing other people to just, this is it.
Yeah.
This is what you're going to believe. This is what you're going to do. This is what you're going to accept. And what is it leading us to? It's leading us to the Antichrist, where now you can't buy and sell unless you have his mark. That's what it's going back to. It's all leading to that. But Black Lives Matter, I look at Black Lives Matter and I say to myself, they are like the American version of the Taliban. Because they're on a crusade. They're on a mission, right? White people bad. Wait a minute. It's like LeBron James. LeBron James wants Black Lives to Matter. But, dude, how many millions do you make a year playing in the NBA? And
exactly.
there's white players on your team.
Mm-hmm.
There's white players.
Yeah.
Do you see them as white supremacists? By the way, white players on his team that make far less than he does.
Yes.
Right? Because he's the top player on the team. He gets top billing. He makes top money. The rest of the players on the team make chicken feed compared to him, and yet he says there's white supremacy. Wait a minute. If the white players were making, right? If the white players were cleaning up financially, then I can say, okay, present your argument. But you're the one making all the money on the team. How can there be white supremacy?
Remember, in this agenda, 2 and 2 does not make 4. Remember?
Right.
It can't in this agenda.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that they said? Was it 2 and 2 make 3 or something? You know, it doesn't.
Yeah.
I forget the exact term, but I think it was Michael O'Fallon who explained that. You know,
right.
It just never adds up. Nothing adds up. And I think a lot of these things are to wear out the saints of the Most High. You know, when we have all these things coming at us from every direction constantly, it can wear you down.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's exactly what Satan would like to do. But one thing, if I could say one thing before we start here, and I'm going to ask you, can we start it at 28:10? I know we were at 32.
Absolutely.
32:30, but 28:10. Virgil was making a point in the middle of that. It's only 4 minutes. But I want to make a point. One thing he said last week, or I noticed last week, Virgil was trying to explain how the officer in Trayvon's case could have received an acquittal. Now, what he was saying was, it goes back to sinful men. That's the point he was trying to make.
Right, absolutely.
It wasn't, you know. So maybe you can express this better, but we're all sinners, but the believers are sinners saved. We've repented of our sin. We've accepted Christ and his sacrifice on the cross as an atonement for our sins. We continue to strive to be more like him. So we receive his correction as we're being sanctified. But we're still fallible. And yes, we still sin. However, what Virgil was trying to say, you know, these people may not even be born again. And they're fallible.
Right.
And can be sinners.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So they're
right.
probably not saved, so you could make a decision instead of someone who would try to practice righteous judgment in making a decision. You might get an earthly decision based on feelings or emotions or whatever in this. And I think that that's what Virgil was trying to get across. Am I correct in that? Did you?
Yeah, absolutely correct. It's just like, look, it's just like the O.J. Simpson trial. O.J.
Mm-hmm.
Simpson is charcoal black. He's black. His
mm-hmm.
wife was white.
Right.
The young man that was delivering the glasses her sunglasses to the house was white, and they were
mm-hmm.
both murdered. Now, everyone knows O.J.
Yep.
Simpson did it. Everybody knows it.
Mm-hmm.
He lost in the civil trial. He lost
Correct.
That, right? I mean,
yep.
found guilty. Till this day, he's going to be paying for what he did, monetarily speaking, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So what Virgil was saying was that when you take into account the sinful nature.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
Here you have a slam dunk decision that O.J. Simpson did kill his wife and that young man. But because you
mm-hmm.
have 12 people on the jury with a sinful nature, they let him off the hook.
Yes.
Now, he was guilty, but they let him off the hook. Why? Well, because we're going to take our revenge on all white people by giving O.J. Simpson an acquittal. They,
mm-hmm.
that's how we get, that's how we justify
yeah.
all the harm that white people have done. We're going to let this black man off the hook so he doesn't get proverbially lynched, okay? The same thing could have happened
right.
with Trayvon Martin. They could have taken, 12 sinners
yeah.
On the jury, could have said to this man, you're guilty. It just turned
yeah.
out different. Now, here's the
yeah.
other thing. Here's the other variable. I've talked to a lot of Christians who are just downright stupid, and I'm just being blunt, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I've spoken to a lot of Christians who are downright plumb stupid, super stupid, right? Let me explain.
Mm-hmm.
Their pastor comes and tells them to tithe. And then not only to tithe, but to give this offering and to give that other offering. And so in obedience to their pastor, without reading the word, they give and they're broke. Right?
Right. Yep.
They're unsaved relatives who don't have the Holy Spirit because they're not saved. They don't have the Holy
right.
Spirit. And they say to their family members, don't you see that your pastor's a Reverend Ike? Don't you see
mm-hmm.
that he's just a rip? So notice, sometimes it doesn't have to do with saved or unsaved. It has to be with stupid or non-stupid,
I wondered about that because people do in the world say, what are you doing giving
right.
your money to that?
Benny Hinn. Why would you be giving money to Benny Hinn?
Yeah, yeah. So you're correct
right?
in that. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
people see it in the world where the church. I think we can be good-hearted people, but we should have more discernment than people in the world.
or let's just say, look, my grandmother, I think went to the third grade. Right, I think
mm-hmm.
I can't even swear on a stack of Bibles that's the grade that she went to. But third grade is as I can remember. She was smart as a whip.
Yep.
No schooling. Right.
Yep.
And I have uncles and aunts who are her children, who went to college, and they're stupid. Okay. So. How did grandma, who only went to the third grade, is smart as a whip and nobody gets over on her, and you went to college and they're running circles around you? Explain
yeah.
that. You see?
Yeah, really. Yeah.
So there
yep.
you go. There you go. It's just, yeah.
Think about this. If it wasn't for your grandma, you might have been wearing scarlet and purple right now. You know
that's
that,
right.
don't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, that little grandma.
That little grandma.
Praise
right?
the Lord
I mean,
for her. Yep.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, little grandma. Little grandma was rough. I tell you, she was rough.
She had to be.
She was rough. Yeah.
She had to be.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Yep. So,
yep.
Well, you know, if people would have no motivation to be Christ-like if they don't have Christ in their life. That's just a fact. They're not going to have any motivation to be Christ-like if they don't have Christ. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, everything they do as far as this jury would be motivated by an earthly mindset. So, but there's one thing that I'm leaning towards lately, that the outcome of this, you know, the idea of the outcome, I'm wondering if a lot of these things is being perpetrated to get the agenda rolling. Do you see what I'm saying? You know, these outcomes, is this moving the agenda forward? Are they people purposely coming back with these decisions because it's part of the agenda? I mean, I lean towards that. I really do.
Right.
So
you're
we'll
right.
see. But I'm just,
you're right.
You know.
You're right. And here's the other thing about Black Lives Matter that I was thinking about while, you know, you've been doing this series. Black Lives Matter first appeared in people like the Reverend Jesse Jackson, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's just the one demanding rights. Then after him, after he got tired of the game, then Al Sharpton came, right? And he was
mm-hmm.
like the one Black Lives Matter person before Black Lives Matter ever existed. But then like a cancer, it goes from one cancer cell to a second cancer cell. Now it metastasizes.
Yep. Yes.
Right? And now you have
yep.
this, and basically, you know, Black Lives Matter is Reverend Al Sharpton in Godzilla form. That's basically what it
mm-hmm.
is.
Yes, exactly. Isn't that amazing? Because I have that note there about you mentioning that last week in my notes, how when Virgil gets into toxic, you know, the word toxic,
yeah.
He talks a little bit about that. And, you know, I mean, it's like you pointed out, there was a clear distinction between who he was, Al Sharpton, and what he stood for and how the church viewed him.
Right.
So most Christians would have stayed away. But if you fast forward this, we have the same rhetoric going on, but now it's accepted. Not only
mm-hmm.
in the church, but this is now a global thing.
Right.
You know. To the point sure. that it's leavening the entire world,
right.
you know, these things.
Right.
So it's amazing.
Yeah,
it's amazing that you mentioned that. But, yeah, I picked up on that, too, in my notes. I thought, wait a minute, that good point on that. So, anyway, when we left off last week, our brothers were discussing, they were on the point, does BLM actually help any of the people that they claim to represent? And Virgil was on a roll with that. So we'll let him finish his thought on 2810. If we could go
okay.
to that.
Yeah, it's already
and
there.
And we'll move on from there.
Okay.
Stop
it
as
is.
You like.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're all familiar with the names George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery.
Is that loud enough?
That's perfect, yes.
Okay.
Breonna Taylor, Tony McDade, Robert Fuller. We're familiar with these names, Elijah McClain. I could go on. But let's stop and ask a question. Since these lives matter to Black Lives Matter, let's ask one question. How much money has gone to the families of those from Black Lives Matter? Now, Daryl, I search far and wide, man, and truth be told, I can't find a dime, and I mean not one dime. Now, I would love for someone to prove me wrong on this. And here's what I do know.
Let me just stop there and say this. Look, whenever a hurricane hits and Franklin Graham comes on, and says, I'm the president of some evidence purse. We've just had a hurricane, and the people down in South Florida are devastated. Would you mind giving to Samaritan's Purse? Okay. When you give money to these organizations, my question is, as they're manipulating and twisting your heart, how much of that goes to hurricane relief?
Right.
And how much goes to the operational, you know, because they have people on, Samaritan Purse has people on staff, Franklin Graham included. He gets, you know, $1 million a year, a paycheck. Now, this is a guy who collects money off of natural disasters. So we have a few natural disasters. He goes on, he makes a sales pitch, you give, he gets his $1 million paycheck, how much of that money trickles down to the people?
Really?
Oh, but
you
brother,
know,
Samaritan's Purse shows up. Okay, they show up. Okay, but how much of that money that is given goes to operational and how much actually to the people? What, you're giving them a gallon of water? You gave them a gallon of water and a blanket? That's what Samaritan Purse did? But then didn't they collect $60 million? And all that translates into a bottle of water and a blanket?
Yeah.
You see?
It's amazing you should say that because I remember watching one of these things for, you know, one of these, I forget who it was on TV, you know, doing this fundraiser to help victims, you know. And when you read the disclaimer on the bottom of the TV, it said 10% of your giving will go to anything that we decide.
Right.
You know, 10% of your contribution will go to whatever agency we feel. And that could be anybody. That could have been another ministry, you know.
Right.
So, and I saw that and I thought, wow, I wonder if people ever read the fine print of giving for these causes like this.
Sure, sure.
They could give that 10% to another ministry, and it's only 10% that, you know, they're giving. So, out of your money.
Yeah. And like they said, okay, they felt inspired to stop Black Lives Matter because of George Floyd. How much did you give to George Floyd's family? Nothing.
Right.
Nothing.
Yep. Yeah.
Nothing. You see? So that's why I'm very leery about all these, you know, we talked about on Fox News how they have that Association of Christians and Jews. And then they show you, look at this woman, survivor from the Holocaust. Can we help her? She is starving. And I'm saying, wait a minute.
Yeah.
All those people from the Holocaust period are dead. What do you mean she's a survivor from the Holocaust? What, she was in her mother's womb? When? What are you talking about?
I know.
You see?
I know.
You see? And
yep.
It's a scam. The way I look at it, it's a scam. It's a scam.
Right.
So
it
I'm
is.
Glad that these.
It
I'm
is.
Glad that they're bringing it up now.
Yeah.
I'm glad that, you know, okay, here's more.
Yep.
I do know that Black Lives Matter has benefited from the deaths of each of the people that I've mentioned. In fact, Fred Lucas, author of the book Tainted by Suspicion, The Secret Deals of Electoral Chaos, the electoral chaos of disputed presidential elections. He wrote an article that was carried by the Daily Caller. And Lucas cites 18 corporations. And he cites these based upon the corporations the corporations themselves. These are the corporations said what themselves, the money they've given directly to the Black Lives Matter group. These corporations include DoorDash, $500,000. $500,000 by Deckers. $10 million over 10 years to 12 groups, including Black Lives Matter. $500,000 by Gatorade. $250,000 by Microsoft. $500,000 by Glossier Skincare. $500,000 by Airbnb. $350,000 by Unilever, $500,000 by Nabisco, $500,000 by Dropbox. Brother, I could go on and on and on. Now, you've got to ask yourself a question. If the black lives of those murdered actually mattered to Black Lives Matter, how are they caring for those black lives? Now, let me get real for just a second, brother. We've been doing this show for 2 years, and here's what I know about you and me. I know that my life matters to you. There are many ways that I could tell our audience that my life matters to you. For example, if I told you I had a financial situation that wouldn't allow me to make ends meet, I know exactly what you would say to me before we ended the conversation. You would say to me, hey bro, let me ask you, is there anything you need from me? And I mean anything. I mean, we've had conversations along those lines about other issues. Guess what? And I would know exactly what you meant. I would know that if something happened to me and to my family, you and your family would be there for me. And I know this because my life, now I haven't lost my life, nor has any of my loved ones' lives been lost. But if they had, if I or anyone in my family had lost their lives, I can guarantee you this, that those to whom my life matters would step up and do whatever was necessary to take care of any need or any shortfall that my family and I would experience. Why? Because that's what it means for someone's life to matter. By that standard, how does Black Lives Matter stack up? Brother, I've done my research into the names of those who BLM claims that they're standing for. What I've found is that those families that have been impacted most by the loss, they seem to be moving forward far from the oversight and care of the Black Lives Matter movement. For example, BLM is no longer seeking justice for Trayvon. You see, the BLM movement isn't interested in justice. Black Lives Matter only finds benefit in dead black bodies. Justice is irrelevant to advance their cause. I know we're going to go over a great deal of ground to cover, and so I just want to be clear that the BLM movement is all about standing tall on the dead bodies of black men by white officers for the purpose of destroying America and replacing it with the reign and terror witnessed in video clips that headline the nightly news.
And in that sense, Black Lives Matter is no different than any other opportunistic organization that can't wait for a hurricane to hit and, you know, can't wait for another earthquake to strike in order to that as a fundraising ploy.
These are organizations
that they rise to supremacy based on the misery of other people. See? I mean, that's, you know, so they all learn from each other. You know, they all learn.
Yeah, to me, the best point made was, if black lives really mattered to BLM, why wouldn't they make things better for the victim? Wouldn't that just make things better for the victims, and why haven't they done that? You know, I think the answer is simple. They'd be out of business, you know?
Sure.
If they don't have a constant, you know, flow of injustices going on, they can't exploit them. They don't get funding, and they don't get financial support. And if you remember, these leaders of the movement are buying real estate like crazy. Now they have to keep that money flowing somehow.
Sure.
Now.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
You see, and again, now this is the interesting thing also that I found about what he just said. If you notice, Black Lives Matter is not going to black people for money.
Yeah.
They're not.
That's a good
point.
That's a good point.
Because black people, you know, especially the groups that they are trying to represent, are already getting fleeced by their churches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See, if I try to fleece you after you came out of church, I'm not getting much. Because the pastor didn't leave you with much. the pastor didn't leave you with much, right? So now who Black Lives Matter is playing another game. They're going to the corporations.
Yeah, while think about it. They hate capitalism, and yet
right.
they're going to companies, you know, different
that
corporations.
Thrive. That thrive on capitalism.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And all those companies that they mentioned, all of those companies benefit from the tax loopholes that Black Lives Matter is always ranting against. Oh, the 1%,
right.
the 1%. Look, they don't pay taxes. But those are the jokers you're going to for the money.
Yes, exactly.
Right?
Yep.
That's it.
Amazing.
Yep. All right, here's more.
Preach, bro. Preach. You know, at this point, Omaha, in the episode, in our conversation, someone listening to this might be asking themselves right about now, well, what does all this talk about impetus and motive and intent have to do with Black Lives Matter? Well, it has to do with it because, as I mentioned earlier, given the increasing numbers of professing Christians and Christian churches, ministries, and organizations that are aligning themselves with Black Lives Matter, the organization, thinking mistakenly that it's all about a hashtag that promotes the universal worth and value of the lives of black human beings, it's important to know not only that Black Lives Matter organization exists, but why Black Lives Matter, the organization, exists. Now, we can rightfully deduce, I believe, from the aforementioned words that I quoted earlier from the Black Lives Matter website, that if Trayvon Martin, okay, if Trayvon Martin had been any ethnicity other than black, you and I might not be having this conversation, Omaha.
Right.
And to further underscore the impetus upon which that organization was founded, I will again quote from the Black Lives Matter website in their own words, quote, enraged by the death of Trayvon Martin and the subsequent acquittal of his killer, George Zimmerman, and inspired by the 31-day takeover of the Florida State Capitol by Power U and the Dream Defenders, we took to the streets. A year later, we set out together on the Black Lives Matter Freedom Ride to Ferguson in search of justice for Mike Brown and all of those who have been torn apart by state-sanctioned violence and anti-black racism. Forever changed, we returned home and began building the infrastructure for the Black Lives Matter Global Network, which, even in its infancy, listen to this, even in its infancy, has become a political home for many, unquote. So the Black Lives Matter website says, enraged by the death of Trayvon Martin and the subsequent acquittal of his killer, George Zimmerman. Now that one statement, Omaha, that one statement launches us into a discussion about something that is much bigger than any one organization such as Black Lives Matter. And that discussion is on the topic of justice. That discussion that statement that I just read from Black Lives Matter launches us into is on the topic of justice. That is what justice is and what it is not, okay? You see, Black Lives Matter wants people to think it wants justice that is unbiased, impartial, and equitable. That kind of justice is often referred to as, quote, cosmic justice, unquote,
yes.
Okay?
Yes.
Cosmic justice, right? Cosmic justice is justice that is totally impartial and completely objective. It is justice that is perfect. It is justice that is unblemished, untarnished, and completely devoid of prejudicial bias or partiality of any kind and without regard to outcomes, okay? Without regard to outcomes. Now, though Black Lives Matter would never define or juxtapose the concept of justice as being rooted in the nature and character of the God of the Bible, they would never do that. Nevertheless, the concept of cosmic justice is grounded in the sovereignty and providence of God. But the thing is, Omaha, if you subscribe to the idea of cosmic justice, and the notion that a sovereign God is in control of everything that occurs in his world and the societies within that world, including the outcome of every matter that is in dispute, it means also that you willingly accept the outcome of a matter that is in dispute, regardless of whether you are pleased with that outcome or not.
Right.
That is what true cosmic justice is. But Black Lives Matter isn't interested in that kind of justice. Now, to drive that point home, I want our listeners to consider what author Noah Rothman, what Noah Rothman says in his book, Unjust, Social Justice and the Unmaking of America, where Rothman writes this, quote, "If we think of the objective, blind justice associated with the rule of law as analogous to free market capitalism, mm-hmm. modern social justice is the equivalent of a command economy. In such a system, justice is a finite commodity, like aluminum or wheat, but there is no supply chain. If one person has it, another is deprived of it. Therefore, it falls on a society's most enlightened to distribute justice to the most deserving." The phrase, quote, social justice, unquote, would seem to describe a value-neutral proposition to which anyone in his right mind would subscribe. It is, in fact, less a theory of justice. Now listen to this. Rothman says that social justice is, in fact, less a theory of justice than a new way of thinking about how society should be ordered.
Yes.
The identity politics, and this is to your point earlier, Omaha, the identity politics practiced by today's social justice activists has retained its vestigial quasi-religious traits. Though this dogma has traditionally been most attractive to the collectivist left, it has recently found an audience on the populist right. Those who see themselves as members of a marginalized class, yes, marginalized in quotes, those who see themselves as members of a, quote, marginalized, unquote, class, and who seek payback against their perceived oppressors through both state and non-government institutions are social justice advocates, whether they know it or not. But harboring grievance is toxic, and in the hands of an influential set of activists, social justice has turned poisonous. I want to read that sentence again from Noah Rothman. He says, but harboring grievance is toxic, and in the hands of an influential set of activists, social justice has turned poisonous. It appeals to our pettiness and stokes envy. It compels us to think of ourselves and those around us as victims inhabiting a complex matrix of persecution. While robbing us of our sense of agency, it entices us to take out our frustrations on our neighbors. It demands that we define people by their hereditary traits and insists that we take subjective inventory of the, quote, privileges, unquote, we acquire at birth. Mm-hmm. It rejects as folly the idea that we are free to rise as far as individual aptitude and merit allow. For social justice devotees, listen to this. This is BLM in a nutshell. For social justice devotees, the American idea is a lie, unquote. That was Noah Rothman from his book, Unjust, subtitled The Social Justice Unmaking of America. Social Justice and the Unmaking of America.
You want to comment to that point? You want to?
Well, I can go back and just say a couple things he said. Yes, he's right. God is sovereign. He's the only one that can distribute, you know, perfect justice, and he does. So, you know, I mean, and if you look at it this way, and I think we've all thought about that, have you ever, you know, had something go the opposite way than the way you thought it should go? And yes, we could all say that. We're trusting God, but it didn't go the way we wanted, or it didn't work out the way we wanted it to. Well, God in his sovereignty knew what was best for us, even though it looks bad sometimes, you know, and he knows our future. Some things help us grow that we don't know about, or sometimes things, you know, do not manifest because, quite simply, we would make a mistake that we might regret. You know, all these things, God is in control of all that. So, you know, and also prophecy will be fulfilled. So the things that happen, you know, the point about sovereignty, yes, you can rest in the Lord even when things are, you know, the turmoil is going on around you. We need to trust him and trust his decisions. Do you agree with that? Or, I mean, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, look, God is sovereign. We pray
yeah.
for people to be healed so that they don't die, and then they die.
Yeah.
Who's in control? God is.
Right.
You know, someone murders your child, and you want justice, and how many parents have died with their child's death never being vindicated without knowing who the killer was? The killer got away scot-free, right? Okay. Well, there's a
yeah.
judgment day. On that,
yeah.
they got away with it here, but they won't get away with it in eternity. God is sovereign.
Correct.
Right?
That's right.
So we just, you know, and you know, we've been
that's
wrong
comforting
many times.
To me.
Sure.
That's comforting to me. That was,
right.
you know, to me, when I understood that, it was extremely comforting because all our cares are cast on him that way, you know, on
right.
the Lord. We're casting all our care on the Lord then, you know, and we have to accept outcomes with that. But in that, we know that whatever happened was for their best or our best, you know, interest in it. Because, you know, that's comfort. That's comfort to me. So
that's it.
People don't
that's
realize
it.
That.
And most people don't because they don't read the Bible. And if they read the Bible, they don't believe it. You know.
Well, they think it's goes back to what you're teaching, the decree and the declaring and all that. They think that they're in control of everything, that they can control things. That comes
right.
through the Word of Faith movement. All those
mm-hmm.
things you taught on and took down were simply, I mean, if you look at it, God is sovereign. You can't do any of those things. You know, you don't have
yeah.
the power to do the things that they say because that tells me, if you believe that, that tells me that you don't believe in the sovereignty of God, you know, because no one has control over God. And so that's what I'm saying. A person, if they're saying, well, I'm going to do this or I can, you know, my words have power and all that. No, they don't. It's only God's word that has the power. And the scriptures
right.
they give you were directed, we're talking about him, not
right.
us. So,
absolutely.
You know, so, yeah. I mean, I'm just thinking about, too, also, you know, where's our heart here for our children in this? If we follow this agenda, it's going to put our children in slavery. You know, the government becomes the parent. You know, and being a parent normally keeps you from being, you know, from self-preservation because we're, you know, we're constantly thinking about our children in this,
mm-hmm.
you know. But this is putting people... They don't realize it, but it's putting them in such a bondage. And this is not just a group of people. This is the world. We'll end up that way. This is global,
right.
on a global scale.
Right.
So that's just a couple of things that I thought of in the middle of that.
All right. Here's more.
Now, along those same lines of thought, I want to quote from the noted economist and author Thomas Sowell. Thomas Sowell, in his book Discrimination and Disparities, writes this, quote, despite the inability to confiscate and redistribute human capital, nevertheless, human capital is, ironically, one of the few things that can be spread to others without those with it having any less remaining for themselves. But one of the biggest obstacles to this happening is the, quote, social justice, unquote, vision, in which the fundamental problem of the less fortunate is not an absence of sufficient human capital, but the presence of other people's malevolence. For some, Abandoning that vision would mean abandoning a moral melodrama starring themselves as crusaders against the forces of evil, unquote. Now, that is Black Lives Matter perfectly described. Black Lives Matter sees themselves as crusaders against the forces of evil. Now, if those quotes from Nora Rothman and Thomas Sowell don't describe the worldview to which Black Lives Matter subscribe, I don't know what does. But we're going to have a lot more to say about that worldview later in this episode. In the meantime, any thoughts from you, Omaha?
Lots of thoughts. I loved what you said about the quote that you gave from Noah Rothman, where he said modern social justice is the equivalent of a command economy. In such a system, justice is a finite commodity like aluminum or wheat, where there's no supply chain. If one person has it, another is deprived of it. I think that quote in and of itself was definitely weighty. I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier when you were reading from the Black Lives Matter website, and they talked about being enraged by the death of Trayvon Martin and the subsequent acquittal of his killer, George Zimmerman. And they also talked about it being in search of justice for Michael Brown. And I told you I'm going to pull a T.D. Jakes and kind of leap off of a word
here
in just a second and kind of take it to another level. But I really want to begin by looking at the issue of Michael Brown. This is the same Michael Brown, again, whose death launched the Hands Up, Don't Shoot falsehood. You remember that back in the day?
Yep, sure do.
I only emphasize this to bring the point that you made earlier regarding justice. Black Lives Matter is not interested in justice. Empowered by the same race-hustling tactics of their predecessors, Jackson and Sharpton, BLM finds themselves running across the country to find the latest hot spot where they engage in a narrative, regardless of how egregious, that fits their goal of stirring up the emotions of the gullible. It was the Obama administration's Department of Justice, led by Eric Holder, that could not find enough evidence in the Michael Brown case to charge the officer of wrongdoing in the shooting of Michael Brown. After 7 months of investigation, Attorney General Eric Holder said the following in a statement regarding the issue. And this is a lengthy quote, but it's worth noting because it really amplifies the point that you just made, that this is not about impartiality. This is not about seeking justice in any way, shape, or form. But here's what Eric Holder said. He said, quote, "Nearly 7 months have passed since the shooting death of 18-year-old Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. This tragic incident provoked widespread demonstrations and stirred strong emotions from those in the Ferguson area and around our nation. It also prompted a federal investigation by the U.S. Department of Justice, the Criminal Section of the Civil Rights Division, the U.S. Attorney's Office of the Eastern District of Missouri, and the FBI, seeking to determine whether this shooting violated a federal civil rights law." Now, this morning, and this is when he was writing, he says, "This morning, the Justice Department announced the conclusion of our investigation and released a comprehensive 87-page report documenting our findings and conclusions." I want to pause here and say that in preparation, brother, for our podcast, I actually walked through the 87-page report so that I would know exactly what I was talking about when we got together during our time.
Awesome.
The 87-page report documenting our findings and conclusions and listen to this, the facts do not support the filing of criminal charges against the officer, Darren Wilson, in this case. Michael Brown's death, though a tragedy, did not involve prosecutable conduct on the part of Officer Wilson. He goes on to say, "This conclusion represents the sound, considered, and independent judgment of expert career prosecutors within the Department of Justice. I have been personally briefed on multiple occasions about these findings, and I," again, this is Eric Holder of the Obama administration's department, he says, "I concur with the investigative team's judgment and the determination about our inability to meet the required federal standard." He said, "The outcome is supported by the facts we have found." Now, he mentions this. He says, "I know that these findings may not be consistent with some people's expectations. To all those who have closely followed this case, who have engaged in important national dialogue. It inspired. I urge you to read this report in full. He says, I recognize that these findings in our report may leave some to wonder how the department's findings can differ so sharply from the initial and widely reported accounts of what transpired. I want you to hear this closely. He said this, I want to emphasize that the strength and integrity of America's justice system has always rested, this is a point that you made earlier, Daryl, has always rested on its ability to deliver impartial results in precisely these type of difficult circumstances, adhering strictly to the facts and the law regarding these assumptions. Now, again, I took the time to read that because I want to make clear this is not some, you know, white conspiracy to push down the evidence, right? This is Obama, the Black Messiah, right? And his and Eric Holder, his Attorney General, who took all of the time that they could to investigate the context of the Michael Brown shooting. Now, again, this is the catalyst. The Trayvon Martin case and the Michael Brown case are the catalyst for the Black Lives Matter movement that we currently are dealing with. And we see in both of those cases, they're on the basis of information that's inaccurate and incorrect when rightly examined. Now, Daryl, when I think of when I think of chaos, right? When I think of the King of Chaos, I'm reminded of the comic book character, the Joker, right? The Joker. Yep. Now, the Joker would first appear in DC Comics in 1940, and the Joker was Batman's nemesis. Now, he was known for creating chaos. My favorite version of the Joker was the movie debut in 2008 of Batman: The Dark Knight. You remember watching this movie?
Yep, I sure do.
Yeah, now this Joker was played by Heath Ledger. This Joker had no other plan than to create absolute chaos for Batman and the people of Gotham. It's some of the things that the Joker said in the movie that makes me think of the BLM movement. Because it was the Joker in the movie who said this. He said this, man, and I quote, "As you know," he said, "madness is like gravity. All it takes is a little push." And then he followed with this, man, quote, "Introduce a little anarchy, upset the established order, and everything becomes chaos." He said, "I'm an agent of chaos."
Uh-huh.
Now, if this isn't an exact example of what we're seeing in our culture today with the Black Lives Matter movement, I don't know what is. BLM is not interested in cosmic justice. They're interested in creating chaos for the systemic overthrow of the government.
And it's not just the systemic overthrow of the government. They're looking to enrich themselves.
Yes.
Because they're not doing this for free. This is their job. Right?
Yep.
Does Franklin Graham does what he does because he loves Jesus?
No. It's about the money. I mean, at the end of the day, they're hirelings, aren't they?
Right. I mean, I can say unequivocally no, because who needs $1 million paycheck a year? I mean, who needs to get paid $1 million? Who? Tell me who. Who needs $1 million?
Only people with millions of dollars of expenses.
Right. No. But you know, if the Son of Man, if Jesus, whom you claim to follow, had not where to lay his head, what are you doing pocketing $1 million a year off of his name? And remember, it's called Samaritan's Purse, which means the Samaritan was giving out money, not taking in money.
Taking in, yes. That's a good point.
Right?
Yes. Excellent point.
All of these people are raking in the bucks.
Yeah.
That's what they're
doing.
And
you have to remember, in England, it's not BLM. BLM now stands Liberation Movement. See? And what they explained, it's political. This is a political movement. This is what it's about, politics.
Right.
And, you know, you're the expert on the comics, but I find it funny that the movies have such a, you know, a certain amount of truth that absolutely exposes different agendas in them. You know, out of chaos comes order, right? That's their motto.
Sure.
You know.
And that's why I'm a comic book
fan. How can you overthrow the government when they're involved in it? I mean, you know. But go ahead.
Right. No, I'm a comic book fan because you always see the forces of good versus evil.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you see,
yep.
right? In the the comic books, in the, take for example Superman. Superman is in the DC universe. Superman is rich, right? Does Superman use his powers to rob banks? No. I mean, is super. What does he do? Superman is a reporter for the Daily Planet. Superman has a 9-to-5. Superman makes less money than your bishop, and he's Superman. And your bishop is a clown. Your bishop is a clown. Superman is, and yet Superman has a 9-to-5. You see, always.
And a cape.
You see, right. All
so
those
your
people.
Bishop. Go ahead.
Right.
I'm sorry.
All those people in the comics who are for good hold a regular job, and all the people in the comics who are villains live off the misery and exploitation of the people around them. And that's just, that should tell you everything.
That should. You know, I mean, in this, if a person has something, and the point they were making is that means another person is deprived of it, right? So if you think about it, and that's going to go for all people, not just a certain ethnic group, you know, because that's what Marxism does. So if you worked 40 or 50 hours a week, let's say, and you buy, you know, you get what you get. You just have the things around you that you purchased and stuff. The government in Marxism looks at what you have, And they tell you you have too much, so you need to give that up to someone who may not have worked as hard for it. Okay. Now that person is going to think that that's a great idea. But then they move it on to someone else. So they're taking the person that got it, they're taking from them, because there's always somebody that's not going to work for it underneath them that will get it, you know, get the money. So you take it, you start out with the person who's working 40 and 50 hours a week. You know, that's capitalism. But then you start taking from them, and then the government takes from the people that they have given it to. They take because now they have more than the people underneath them. So, you know, what you get down to is it ends up is just you have a national income. You know, that's what's going to happen at the end of that.
Right.
You know, no matter how you view it, it's a theft. It's the government doing, you know, committing theft on people. You know, they're deciding, and that's exactly what this is. And by the way, I want to mention something there. He wasn't complimenting Jake. He shows how he twisted words. Because Daryl says, oh, no.
Right.
When he mentioned
Jake. No.
Yeah.
But it was
he's like, oh, no.
Right.
So, anyway.
Okay.
That's what they're interested in.
Brilliant point. And just to revisit that issue of that sort of context, that construct of cosmic justice, I want to quote again from the renowned economist and author Thomas Sowell, arguably or unarguably, in my opinion, one of the greatest minds our country has ever known. Sowell wrote a book called The Quest for Cosmic Justice. And in that book, he explains justice this way. Quote, cosmic justice is not simply a higher degree of traditional justice. It is fundamentally a different concept. Traditionally, justice or injustice is a characteristic of a process. Let me pause right there. You recall earlier in the episode, Omaha, that I mentioned that Black Lives Matter they had no grievance. They had no problem with the way the trial was conducted of George Zimmerman. They had issues with the outcome, with the outcome. Okay, so this point here that Saul is bringing up is crucial. Saul says cosmic justice is not simply a higher degree of traditional justice. It is a fundamentally different concept. Traditionally, justice or injustice is a characteristic of a process. A defendant in a criminal case would be said to have received justice if the trial were conducted as it should be, under fair rules and with the judges and jury being impartial. After such a trial, it could be said that, quote, justice was done, unquote, regardless of whether the outcome was an acquittal or an execution. Conversely, if the trial were conducted in violation of the rules and with a judge or jury showing prejudice against the defendant, this would be considered an unfair or unjust trial, even if the prosecutor failed in the end to get enough jurors to vote to convict an innocent person. In short, Saul says, traditional justice is about impartial processes rather than either results or prospects. Now, let me pause again. This is why I spent time early on emphasizing the fact that Black Lives Matter was fundamentally founded on the basis that they were upset that George Zimmerman was acquitted. They had no issue with the way the trial was conducted. As Saul says here, and as I said earlier, if that had been the case, then they had some issues to lodge. Absolutely. But there were no issues with the case. They were just upset with the outcome. Okay?
I would put it this way. If I was talking, if the four of us were talking, I said, can I raise my hand? Yeah, okay. Go ahead, brother. Listen, they used the excuse that they didn't like the verdict, only to create a hustle.
Yes.
See?
Exactly.
I mean, that,
and being
I
from
mean,
the hood,
I,
you would know that.
Right. See,
you know
see,
the hustles in the hood.
Right.
Yeah.
You're going to use, listen, these people, for again, I go back to these organizations that feed, they feed off the miseries of others. A hurricane hits. Okay, here, watch. In 15 hours, there'll be a commercial. Hello, this is Franklin Graham from Samaritan's Purse, and we are here. New Orleans has been devastated, and we need your help. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, did Jesus send his disciples around helping people after hurricanes? In the history of the church for the last 2,000 years, you tell me what organization has there been out there that's been raising money? Because if you look at the Salvation Army, the origin of the Salvation Army was what? Preaching salvation.
Yeah.
The Salvation Army didn't have Santa Clauses ringing a bell at Christmas time with a red bucket, right?
Right.
So that's not the history of the Salvation Army. That's not their history. They preach Christ. Now they don't preach Christ.
Mm-hmm.
You know what they do? They ring a bell and they collect money. They take donations.
Yeah.
They take old clothes. They'll take furniture, right? I mean, that's the Salvation Army. That's not how it started. So here you have the Salvation Army, which is more than what it's become. They never preach Jesus. You can go into whatever Salvation Army there is. There's no one telling you about the Lord.
Right.
No one. About the cash. The same thing with Samaritan's Purse. There's not been one Listen, the reformers weren't collecting money to help relief victims.
No.
What the church is into is preaching the gospel. But you see,
these people
are slick. They say, let's create an organization where the people on top make millions. We get to go on TV. We get to visit the Oval Office. We get to rub shoulders with the A-listers. We get to be in front of the camera. Larry King will interview us because, you know, we're big shots now. We get to ride on private planes. That's what this is all about. Yeah. It's not about the people. It's never about the people.
Well, that separates the wheat and tares there because, you know, they've fallen for that love of money. That's the thing. See, the money is their god now. You know, they've replaced the Lord. You know, it's about the money. It's not about him anymore. And
right. That's
the shame of this whole thing. That is the root. That's their
right. Love
now. They've replaced that love, you know, of preaching the gospel. You know, they've taken that from putting their hands in everyone's pockets because they like the money. And that corrupts. The love of money corrupts, and that's what
right. We're
seeing. You know,
and again, I hate to harp on Franklin Graham, but if you...
Today's his day.
Right. Listen, when was the last time you heard him preach a message? Never.
No. I can't remember.
Right?
I can't remember.
But watch the next hurricane. Wait for the next disaster, and you'll see him. You'll see
mm-hmm.
him.
Yeah.
That's what you're going to
see. Well, that's like Sharpton. That's
right. Just
a different type of Sharpton. Shows up
exactly.
And there's a disaster.
Exactly. And look,
you know,
look. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say our legal system, it's not perfect, but what is the alternative to it, you know? What's the alternative if you take it
down?
Well,
it's the best legal system there is, and the reason why
mm-hmm.
it's not perfect is because you have imperfect people sitting on the jury.
Exactly.
This is why, this is why attorneys... They, you know, you can have the judge could have 150 potential jurors, and what
mm-hmm.
your legal team and what the other the prosecutor and the defendant, the defense attorney and the prosecutor, they go through all of the jurors.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a problem with capital punishment? Have you ever been raped? Have you ever been taken advantage of? They have these questionnaires that they put jurors through
yes. To
see if they're smart.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're stupid, what do? I don't want this juror. You see, because that's the whole process. Your team
mm-hmm.
and the opposing team gets to go through every juror, give them a questionnaire, ask them questions to see if they're going to be impartial.
Right.
To see if they have a coconut that works. Right.
I'll tell you, on the prosecutor's side, if they have a juror that's a lawyer, they don't pick them. They don't want the smart, you know, on
right. The
prosecution.
They
because a juror that's a lawyer can poke holes in their case, you know,
sure.
And they don't. So mainly the prosecution doesn't like it when they get a lawyer in the jury pool. But go ahead.
You want to see so it's a perfect system on paper. What makes it
mm-hmm.
imperfect is you may have 7 smart people and 5 dum-dums. That's it. That's what makes it imperfect. That's what makes it imperfect. All right, here's more.
Saul continues. Similar conceptions of justice or fairness extend beyond the legal system. A, quote, fair fight, unquote, is one in which both combatants observe the rules, regardless of whether that leads to a draw or to a one-sided beating. Applying the same rules of baseball to all meant that Mark McGwire hit 70 home runs, while some other players hit less than 10. The, quote, career open to talents, unquote, or, quote, a level playing field, unquote, usually means that everyone plays by the same rules and is judged by the same standards. Again, if the process itself, please don't miss this, listeners, if the process itself meets that standard, then no matter the outcome, you had your chance, Soul says. But this is not what is meant by those people who speak of social justice. In fact, rules and standards equally applicable to all are often deliberately set aside in pursuit of, quote, social justice, unquote. Nor are such exceptions aberrations. Listen to this. The two concepts are mutually incompatible. What social justice, Sowell says, what social justice seeks to do is eliminate undeserved disadvantages for selected groups, unquote. There you have the objectives of Black Lives Matter in one sentence.
Yeah.
Black Lives Matter seeks to eliminate undeserved disadvantages or subjective disadvantages for selected groups, only for selected groups, okay? What Black Lives Matter wanted with the trial of George Zimmerman was not cosmic justice. They did not want the kind of justice in which the judicial processes involved were conducted fairly and without prejudice, and where the outcome, regardless if it was favorable to them or not, was achieved in accordance with the law. On the contrary, what Black Lives Matter wanted then and what Black Lives Matter wants today is social justice, not cosmic justice, okay? Black Lives Matter wants the kind of justice in which the processes and outcomes are by definition grounded in partiality, bias, and discrimination so that the outcomes are guaranteed only for certain individuals and groups. That, my friend, is not justice. That is the distortion and perversion of justice. Now, I want our listeners, Omaha, to carefully consider what I just said in light of what Scripture teaches us about how seriously God takes the sin of partiality. Partiality is the cornerstone upon which the Black Lives Matter organization and worldview is built. Now,
What you just said, I want you to slow down. That was so nice. You have to say it twice, and our listeners need to hear what you just stated about the very foundational structure of Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, let me go back a couple of sentences. And what I said earlier was that what Black Lives Matter wanted then, and by then I mean all the way back to 2013, when the organization was founded. What Black Lives Matter wanted then with the Trayvon Martin situation and what Black Lives Matter wants even right now today is social justice. They do not want cosmic justice. They want social justice. Black Lives Matter wants the kind of justice in which the processes and outcomes are by definition, grounded in partiality, bias, and discrimination so that the outcomes are guaranteed for certain individuals and groups. You can go to their own website and see this in black and white.
Absolutely.
That is not justice. That's not justice. That is the distortion and the perversion of justice, okay? Now, I want to reiterate again. I want to ask our listeners again to consider what I just said. Consider what I just said in light of what Scripture teaches us about how incredibly seriously God takes the sin of partiality, because partiality is the cornerstone upon which the entire Black Lives Matter organization and worldview is built, okay? It's why it exists. It exists on the fundamental cornerstone that they embrace partiality. I want to give our listeners a heads up. I have 17 Scripture verses that I want to cite.
Before he cites those scriptures, anything you want to comment right there to that point? Because he's going to get deep in the weeds when it comes to the scriptures. So I just want to...
Nope. Not a thing.
Oh.
I'll let him go.
Okay.
To establish how God views the sin of partiality, how God views justice, okay? Scripture number one, Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 17. You shall not show partiality in judgment. You shall hear the small and the great alike. You shall not fear man, for the judgment is God's. Okay? You shall not fear man, for the judgment is God's. That's Deuteronomy 1:17. Deuteronomy chapter 16, verses 19 and 20. You shall not distort justice. You shall not be partial, and you shall not take a bribe, for a bribe blinds the eyes of the wise and perverts the words of the righteous. Justice and only justice you shall pursue, that you may live and possess the land which the Lord your God is giving you. Proverbs 16, verse 33. The lot is cast into the lap, but its every decision is from the Lord. Proverbs 16, verse 11. A just balance and scales belong to the Lord. All the weights of the bag are his concern. That means all outcomes concern God. Exodus chapter 20, verse 16. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. Exodus 23, verses 1 through 3. You shall not bear a false report. Do not join your hand with a wicked man to be a malicious witness. You shall not follow the masses in doing evil, nor shall you testify in a dispute so as to turn aside after a multitude in order to pervert justice. Nor shall you be partial to a poor man in his dispute. Let me pause right here. I love how God's a concept of justice is so righteous. It is so pure that it is a sin even to be partial to a poor man in a dispute. Okay? Even to the poor, if you're partial to the poor, that's a sin. Proverbs chapter 14, verse 25. A truthful witness saves lives, but he who utters lies is treacherous. Deuteronomy chapter 19, verse 15. A single witness shall not rise up against a man on account of any iniquity or any sin which he has committed. On the evidence, it says, on the evidence of two or three witnesses, a matter shall be confirmed. Deuteronomy 17, verse 6. On the evidence of two witnesses or three witnesses, he who is to die shall be put to death. He shall not be put to death on the evidence of only one witness. Numbers chapter 35, verse 30. If anyone kills a person, the murderer shall be put to death at the evidence of witnesses. But no person shall be put to death on the testimony of one witness. Proverbs chapter 25, verse 18. Like a club and a sword and a sharp arrow is a man who bears false witness against his neighbor. Proverbs 12, verse 17. He who speaks truth tells what is right, but a false witness speaks deceit. Proverbs chapter 6, verses 16 through 19. There are six things which the Lord hates, yes, seven which are an abomination to him: haughty eyes, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that run rapidly to evil, a false witness who utters lies, and one who spreads strife among brothers. Proverbs 14, verse 5, a trustworthy witness will not lie, but a false witness utters lies. Proverbs 19, verse 28. A rascally witness makes a mockery of justice, and the mouth of the wicked spreads iniquity. Leviticus chapter 5, verse 1. Now if a person sins after he hears a public adjuration to testify when he is a witness, and this is a person who lies under oath. If a person sins after he hears a public adjuration to testify when he is a witness, whether he has seen or otherwise known, if he does not tell it, that is, if he does not tell the truth about what he has seen or otherwise known, then he will bear his guilt. And then lastly, Leviticus chapter 19, verse 15. You shall do no injustice in judgment. Leviticus 19, 15. You shall do no injustice in judgment. You shall not be partial to the poor, nor defer to the great, but you are to judge your neighbor fairly. That was Leviticus 19:15. Now, I cited those 17 verses, being completely aware, as I said earlier, that Black Lives Matter is in no way, they in no way resemble an ecclesiastical body. Nevertheless, the principles that are intrinsic to those verses help us to see what true cosmic justice, if you will, looks like in a society. And it is on that note that I want to interject these words by John Calvin from his classic work, his Institutes of the Christian Religion. Calvin said this, quote, "In all laws, we must bear these two things in mind, what the law prescribes and how equitable it is. For it is on equity that the law's prescription rests. Since equity is natural, it is inevitably the same for all peoples. Thus, all the laws on earth, whatever their particular concern, should be about equity. As for the laws, regulations, or prescriptions, because they are conditioned by circumstances on which they partly depend, there is no reason why they should not be different, provided they are all directed to the goal of equity. Now, as God's law, which we call moral, essentially bears witness to the natural law and to conscience which our Lord has imprinted on the hearts of all men, that's Romans 1:19, there is no doubt, Calvin says, that the equity of which we now speak is wholly revealed in natural law. Now, listen how Calvin closes this out. Listen closely to this, listeners. That is why, Calvin says, equity, not outcomes, not equality, equity must be the goal. This, if I could pause here real quick, Omar, this is going back to that quote you read from Obama's Attorney General,
Eric Holder.
This point that Calvin is making is why Eric Holder was absolutely right in just saying what he said. Calvin said that is why equity must be the goal, the rule, and the finality of all laws.
All right, we're going to end it there. We stopped it at the 1 hour, 5 minute mark. 1 hour,
right.
5 minutes. And what have you to say, my sister, concerning these last remarks by these two wonderful gentlemen?
Well, I think next week we need to go back. I wrote all those scriptures down, by the way.
Right.
I think we just need to go start it out with the scriptures again.
Okay.
Let's go back and see what he's saying, and then we'll start it out on that. So I'll check where that is. And I would say, you know, I've enjoyed this myself. This is,
absolutely.
You know, I'm sitting and listening and learning from these brothers. Myself.
Right.
So I'm thankful that they put this out there. I'm thankful that you agreed to do this. You know, this show.
Oh, this is wonderful. This is wonderful.
You know.
And, yeah.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I just, you know, I think it's something that we're dealing with. I want to deal with issues that we're dealing with right now. In these times,
right.
What do we do with this? You know, what do we do with these issues? So, as Christians, so go ahead.
No, these guys are wonderful, and like you said, it'll be good for us to go right back to those scriptures. I would add a scripture out of 1 Timothy
mm-hmm.
chapter 5 that speaks about pastors. At 1
mm-hmm.
Timothy 5:19 through 21, we can add that to the list. We can check that out at the end, where Paul says to Timothy, whenever you catch a pastor in the wrong, don't show partiality.
That's right.
Read him the right act and serve the punishment that deserves to be served.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
But that'll be great to go into those scriptures.
Yes.
You know, and there were 17, and I didn't even know we were going to make it through. You said go ahead, and I'm glad we did because he read them all first before discussing
yep.
them, and that was great. So
yep.
wonderful. Yeah. All right.
Well, I would just say to everyone, have a great week, and we'll see you next week, and bring your notepad next time.
And next week is a big show. It's your 250th. So
wow.
That's a milestone. So
well, thank
tune
you.
In next week. Yep. God bless.
All righty. God bless.
sailed on a lonely deep. In the midnight watch I keep, I stand amazed when the stars on the pillows gleam. And though I know a storm is rising above a dark horizon, I know, my Lord, I know you're here with me. So let there be light, Lord, let it shine out of your heart, here and in mine. When it rains from heaven above, let it rain, sweet heavenly love. Let there be light, let there be light. There's a call on the restless tide, it's like a longing endless night, and it breaks the bow like a raging symphony. And though I may be far from shore, I am anchored at heaven's door. Cause I know, Lord, you're here with me. So let there be light, oh Lord, let it shine out of your heart, here out of mine. Lead me out, of the crimson dawn. Let there be light, sweet Jesus, let there be light. Your grace is enough, your grace is enough. Find me, I'm surrounded in an ocean of love. Your grace is enough, grace is enough. Find me, I'm surrounded in an ocean of love. Your grace is enough, your grace is enough. Find me, my Lord, I'm surrounded in an ocean of your love. Let there be light, hello. There is power, power, wonder-working power in the blood of the Lamb. There is power, power, there is wonder-working power in the precious blood of the Lamb, Jesus Christ. Yeah, there is power, there is power. Precious blood.